Indie Prime, yes, Indie Prime, on Indie Live Radio. Indie Prime, yes, Indie Prime, on Indie Live Radio. Well, welcome to the latest Indie Pram podcast on IndieLive.radio. And my special guest today is Paul Colvin, also known as the Indie Poet. Hello, Paul.
Hi there, Ray. Thanks very much for having me.
Thanks very much for coming along and obliging to tell us your story. And I'm sure many listeners have heard your work and have read your work. So we'd like to give a bit more background, a bit more meat on the bone of how you came to become the Indie Poet. And let's start off. You were born in Glasgow in 1954?
Yep. And then...
Whereabouts in Glasgow?
I was born in Yoker.
All right.
Aye, Langholm Street, which is now called Spears Hall Terrace. But I left there when I was six and I went up to Peterson Park. Spent the majority of my younger years there. And then moved down to London in 1980 and eventually come back 2 years ago, looking in to the house I was born in.
Yeah. Why did you go down in the first place? Was there not the opportunities in Scotland for you then?
Well, I was working in Glasgow in a company called Bowes in the High Street as a salesman and get fed up with that. Some of my pals were going to France picking grapes and working in Holland, so I decided to join them there. So I went away, done a 6 month stint over there. Well, 3 months in each place, Amsterdam and Lézignan in the south of France, picking grapes and working in a printer's factory. And when I come back to Glasgow, I was working in a pub, get fed up with that. I had three sisters and a brother down in London, so decided to join up with them there.
So what did you do in London?
First job was working in a stores for a big fire alarm company, then moved to office work. After that, I worked for the MS Society for a number of years as a purchasing manager, and then went back to the tools and was working for the NHS maintenance department in London for the last 17 years. Well, the last 17 years I was there.
Right. So none of your occupations... what jumps out is none of those occupations would make you consider you were a poet. So what gave you the inspiration to start writing poems?
I came up 11 years ago from London for my sister's 60th. I went out on a Friday. We eventually went to bed about 4 o'clock in the morning, pretty hungover the next day when I got, well, pretty drunk. Hungover the next day when I got up, but I had to meet pals in Partick on a Saturday night. So I went out with them, got up on the Sunday morning, and felt pretty rough. So I was having a cigarette at my sister's back door, my wee sister Mamie, well, my old wee, big wee sister. I was having a cigarette at her back door, and I asked her if she had any paper and a bit of paper and a pen or a pencil. And she said, yeah. She gave me a little post-it notepad, you know, like a sort of 2 inches by 2 inches one. And I just wrote about our back garden, 11 verses. And that was the start of it.
Really?
Mm-hmm. That was it.
So you read that out to who?
I've never ever liked poetry, but for some reason I love writing it. And I'd been writing for about four or five years. And I decided to write one about independence in 2012. And I put it up. Then I wrote another one and put it up on my Facebook page. And one of the indie girls got in touch and said, can you write any more? And me being quite brazen about it, I said, well, of course I can. Because there was loads of material there. So I didn't mean to be sort of like bullish about it or anything like that. But it's just I thought, there's all that material untouched. So I started writing. And it was the Yes Movement that gave me the name of the Indie Poet. It wasn't something that I decided to call myself, you know. No, that was down to them. And
you were based down in London at the time?
I was based in London at the time, yeah. So for 5 years I was writing. And then when I came back 2 years ago, it was just great to meet everybody. You know, in my first rally, you know, I remember that well. That was great. It was George Square, and I saw all these faces and people that I knew, but I'd only seen tiny pictures of them on Facebook. But to actually meet them in person was amazing, amazing. And the buzz, the atmosphere, the camaraderie, just the friendliness, everybody laughing and joking with each other. It was just brilliant.
Yeah. For people who do go on the marches and the rallies, that is an experience that a lot of people are getting familiar with, because you're bumping into friends, yeah, left, right and centre.
Yeah, totally.
And it makes it a very sociable event. So if you were down in London, you obviously weren't able to vote in the 2014 referendum.
Correct. I never had a vote. I never had a vote at all down there. And I suppose that's why I got involved really with just the poems, to try and like keep up, boost whatever, you know, and boost the yes movement in any way I could. I knew I had no vote, but that was my way of sort of like doing my bit. I couldn't knock on doors, I couldn't do any of the canvassing. So that was
quite inspirational, what you were actually doing from this.
My hat goes off to everyone up here who was out chapping doors. You know, what I'd done was just what I'd done. It was all I could do. I couldn't do much more.
Uh-huh. Well, I was still chapping doors at 20 to 10 on the night of the referendum, getting people out.
I was probably in bed then, like getting up for a 5 o'clock start the next day.
So how did you feel the next day when the result came through?
I remember going to bed and I had my phone with me. And I swore I'd stay up the whole night, but I fell asleep. And I woke up for work next morning, and Lily Gallagher's daughter, Amy McKechnie, had put a post up, "I can't believe we're lost." And that was it. I mean, I went to work and so disheartened, scunnered, sickened a lot. And I walked into work and some of the guys in London had started like, "Oh, what happened to you last night?" And they just looked at my face, and my boss, he just said, "I think you just go home." He sent me home because I was that gutted. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did you find the reaction to the 2014 referendum, either the build-up to it or the post-result? You know, as experienced in London, how did you feel being a Scot down there and the reaction that was you were getting?
There were quite a few Scots down there that I'd spoken to who didn't want independence. And that was just beyond me. I couldn't get my head around that at all. You know, there were some of them I don't even know how to put it. You know, they had no argument. And they believed all the lies of the British state. And they said, "Oh, we're too weird, too poor, too stupid," the usual nonsense. And I was sickened by it, sickened by it. And even some of the, it was a couple of friends that I had, when all that nonsense started in George Square on September the 19th, you know, with the Union Army gathering in the square and, you know, burning us all tired and taking it off the Johnson sisters. You know, they just looked. I was watching it in the pub that night, and I went in for a pint to see if one of my mates was in there, and I went in, but I left minutes later because they said, "Ah, look at that, you know, what's going on here? You know, typical jocks all fighting amongst each other, wouldn't get their independence." And I thought, "Off, I'm out."
So you're back in Glasgow. Mm-hmm. You've been back 2 years. And you've been continually writing poems on a very regular basis. How many books have you published?
Three wow. books. The latest one came out in April, April the 22nd this year.
Very popular.
Well, as I said, you know, the Yes Movement asked me to write and said, "Oh, keep it up when you're releasing a book." So I put the first one in, and then they asked for a second book. Mm-hmm. And then asked for the third book.
Does it surprise yourself regarding the skill that you've actually self-taught in relation to writing poems? Because I look at poems like a song, And there's so many different songs, there's so many different tunes that one can do, that it takes a phenomenal amount of creative ability to actually work a piece of magic. And I find the same reading your poems, and I'm sure many listeners do as well.
Well, thanks very much. I mean, I don't see it as magic, but I have to say the inspiration that I get is from the Yes Movement. All the inspiration comes from them, and the poems are just based on the lies that Westminster keep feeding us, and the apathy from some folk in Scotland who just believe everything they're told in the Sun, the Mail, Express, whatever paper you want. It's unbelievable.
I think we're pretty fortunate in Scotland that we've got so many people with a creative outlook of, say, for example, yourself doing poems, people doing songs, people doing posters, people doing broadcasts, podcasts, people walking, coming up with ideas for generating publicity. We're not doing too bad in Scotland.
No, we are not. I mean, I talk about the apathy up here, but the apathy in London is pretty surreal, I found. I worked in Charing Cross Hospital. There was, when I started there in 2002, I think it was, when I started there, there were 2,000 staff. The staff had all been whittled away down to about 1,000 or 1,200, something like that. And yet, I worked in the maintenance department. There were 29 of us in the maintenance department. That was the builders, the plumbers and the electricians. And this would be unheard of in Scotland. 27 of those 29 people voted Tory.
Wow.
Not only that, someone was talking to me the day before the last general election. And they said, oh, so-and-so's just lost his wheelchair. The Tories have taken it off them. But the guy went out and voted Tory again the next day.
Oh, no, I find that incredulous.
Absolutely. It's unbelievable.
Because even that's a situation where, you know, I always feel that to some extent that the Scottish Government has done so well for people in Scotland that it's actually cushioned many people who are inclined to vote no against supporting yes, because they've been cushioned by
the decisions
made up here. But there you have a situation where, well, so I feel that people maybe have to get affected personally before they wake up and smell the coffee or smell the bacon. Mm-hmm. But there you're talking about a situation where someone has been personally affected or knows someone close and still votes against their interests.
As I said, there was 29 of us, 27 voted Tory. Right, one guy voted Labour and I voted Green. There was no SNP, so it was either Labour, Tory. And I had a word with one of my colleagues down there, one of the painters. And I said to him, look, so who are you voting tomorrow? And he says, well, who are you voting for? I said, Greens. He says, why Greens? I said, well, I won't vote for Labour again, ever. I used to canvass for Labour. I said, I'll never, ever vote for Labour again after jumping into bed with the Tories in the 2014 referendum. So he came in the next day and he said, oh, Paul, I took your advice. I said, what's that? He says, well, regarding my Labour vote. I said, oh, good, who did you vote for? And he said, Tory. Unbelievable. Now, these are working class guys.
Yeah.
Even in the pub, it was my local pub.
Yeah.
And the majority there were Tories as well.
I think this is where the beneficial point from the 2014 referendum in Scotland is it awakened so many more people in the population to actually thinking about what you're voting for. And most people have now got a good head on their shoulders and making a decision of what's right and what's wrong.
Even the ones who don't really get into politics or even get politics are pretty clued up compared to what I was finding down in London.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll probably be very clued up now because of the Brexit thing. But that's another kettle of fish down there. I mean, I had arranged to go with my son and his fiancée out for a drink and something to eat, see a live band, that sort of thing, on the Friday after the Brexit vote was on the Thursday. So the nice leafy suburb of like Hampton Court area, near the Palace, near Teddington, Richmond, Twickenham, all the nice wee areas. So we've gone down there and I said, I'm just going outside for a smoke. So we've ordered the drinks and I went out the back. This guy comes walking towards me. Oh, what, mate? And I went, yeah, I'm fine. Oh, Jock. And I said, well, I'm Scottish. Are you Catholic Protestant? Celtic Rangers? Are you for independence? And I went, where did that one come from? And I just said to him, well, I believe in self-governance. And we just let the rest of it go. You know, I won't bore you with the rest of the nonsense that went on. But I went back in and I told my son and his fiancée. And they went, that's unreal. So they said they were going outside for a cigarette as well. So because of what happened out in the back, I thought, I'm going to time them. So we were outside for, they were outside for about 9 minutes. And I thought, that's a long time for a cigarette. I walked outside. And what I never said is, my son's fiancée is Indian. And she's a size 6, tiny, standing there, shaking. And I said, what's wrong? They're verbally abusing me. I just went, right, come on, that's it, enough of here, off.
Terrible.
On my way, going into, I'm painting a dark picture of London here, but these were the negatives that I saw down there. You know, like going, when I travelled from Isleworth in West London to Hammersmith, where the hospital was that I worked in, we passed by the Polish Centre, which was at, you know, at the end of Chiswick, just before we got into Hammersmith. Windows smashed, people beaten up and all the rest of it. All because of Brexit. Mm. All because of the Farage and the Johnsons, the Govs, a lot of them, the Rees-Moggs, you know, pushing an agenda that didn't even exist.
Yeah. So you certainly got plenty of scope for material for Poems. Have you done much in the way of Poems about Brexit, or was it mainly concentrated on the...
I done quite a few about Brexit as well. I think it took me a couple of days to see where it was going. You know, I was reading other pages, you know, like Scott to Scott, David McGuinness, Bill McGlenn, people like that, the Indie Girls, they were all in there. Suzanne Campbell Creighton, they're all there and they're all putting this stuff out and I'm taking bits of material off that. You know, they're more clued into the politics. I just sort of like transfer it into rhyme, if you like.
Yeah.
Poaching, plagiarism. Plagiarism.
What's your favourite poem that you've written?
Hey, I don't know. I've never really given it much thought. I mean, my wee blue enamel jest badge, I like that one because it's a wee simple one and I make sure I've got my yes badge on every day, you know, just to make sure.
Yeah.
Jacket's downstairs. You won't find it. You won't find it here.
And mine's on my shirt here. So, yeah. No, I found it's important to try and remember. It's getting into a habit to remember to wear a yes badge because it opens up conversations.
Well, I went to the National Yes Registry meeting last April and one of the guys there, Dave Fenwick, it was him. Who stood up and said, be visible. It doesn't matter how much you shout, if you've got something visible on your yes badge, then that goes much further than all your screaming, shouting and bawling or trying to educate people through words. If you've got that, that'll stand out a mile.
I think the important thing to remember is if you are wearing a yes badge prominently, it's the fact that people see you not just in a march, they're not seeing you a gathering or some sort of talk. Mm-hmm. They're seeing you in everyday life, whether it's popping into a shop, driving around, walking around the street, going into a park, doing normal everyday things. And that's where I feel, you know, if people did remember to put a yes badge on and wear it with pride. In fact, I just put mine on and forget about it until someone maybe makes a comment, which I really welcome, you know. Mm-hmm. because in fact there's a shop I pop into on a fairly regular basis, and guy on the till, it's a regular friendly conversation with him there whenever we see each other, because he sees my badge and I see his. And
all right.
Off we go. And we always make sure that other members of the public within earshot are listening and see the bounce of conversation and say, actually, that looks normal, you know. And I think that helps generally.
I've got two totally different stories here. I mean, when I moved back up here 2 years ago from London, I got in touch with iScot magazine and told them I was changing address. So the guy at the other end of the text, you know, I just knew it was iScot magazine. And the guy at the other end of the private message said, so where are you moving to? And I says, Glasgow. And he said, oh, whereabouts? And I said, Yoker. He says, I'm from Yoker, originally. I says, whereabouts? He says, Kelsa Street. It turns out that he was one of my friend's young brothers, and I remember him with the long hair down way past his shoulders, carrying a Gibson Les Paul. That was Ken McDonald, who runs iScot.
Yeah.
Now, the other side of that, when I moved back to sunny Yoker, I went into the shop, first day back. Have you got the National, please? What's that? They didn't even know what the National was.
Really?
No, didn't even know what it was. And they started getting copies in. But then I started buying my copies elsewhere. You know, I was going the other direction for about 2 weeks. I never went near the shop. And they stopped getting in because I wasn't coming in for it.
You know, we pop into shops and make sure that we could see a visible copy and often find it hidden. We were up at Peterhead after the Aberdeen March, and we went into a shop in Peterhead, and we found it buried. Sandra got all the copies and put them up three spaces.
Nice one.
Yeah, so that's what we tend to do. Now, you've also been sharing a stage. In fact, we shared a stage for the first time both of us ever spoke at a rally earlier this year at Stornoway.
Yeah, that was a great wee rally.
Yeah.
Thoroughly enjoyed that. Yeah. Met some old friends and you again, you know. That was great.
Yep.
Getting up in that big, huge stage that they laid on themselves. Not only that, I don't know how much that rally cost them, but it was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, they did a great job up there.
Yeah, and it wasn't just that. They had a fundraiser afterwards in the local golf club, and I ended up winning a framed prize. Yeah, so
very good.
That was good as well.
Yeah. No, so we also shared a stage at Pacific Quay a few months ago as well.
Yes, we did indeed.
So that's the two times that I've ever spoken was two times you were speaking as well.
I think twice was enough for you because you bolted in Aberdeen once I got up before I got up on stage.
So good stuff. Right, well, Paul, it's been great to have a chat to you.
Well, thanks very much for having me, Ray.
Yeah, thanks for letting us
know. I'd just like to say thanks very much to all those yesers out there, the whole independence movement. I hope to see you in Perth.
I'll be there.
I know you will. Ray, thanks very much. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
An unmarked grave. The stone is not erected, nor the digging of her grave. Her epitaph's unwritten, and she knows she can't be saved. She writhes in pain before her eyes, and knows there is no cure. They stand by, but her fight's in vain, of that she's been assured. Her estate is now in tatters as they clamber for her wealth. Her lawyers sift through her affairs and don't care about her health. They scurry after their own wants, accepting fate will meet their needs. Only knowing death must come to all, and for them death brings their greed. She's a dying breed from long ago, her secret's hidden well. We've never heard the truth from her, but what stories they could tell. She battled hard to win her fight, but alas, she'll soon be gone. And when that dark day finally comes, there will be our brand new dawn. It will be one we will not recognise, but it's one we will embrace. Because for the past 300 years or so, our country you've disgraced. Farewell to you, Britannia, it's not with sadness that I cry. These are tears of joy and happiness as I dance with trembling sigh. You have raped and tortured, pillaged, you cut out my mother tongue. You took my plaid, my music, and every song I sung. I will drink to your extinction, I will revel in our streets, and I will toast my independence with every Scot I meet. I will watch the blood run from your flag, I will see my flag anew. I will see St. Andrew's cross alive against our sky of blue. I will see the digging of your grave, I will watch them lower you down. I will watch as unfurl every flag from every city, village, town. I will wash away her history and write the truth where she has lied, then open up the Scottish heart that she freed when she died. There'll be a party like you've never seen or the world has ever known on the day when Scotland once again is a nation governed by her own. Dance lessons to remember. Old Scotia's looking down in you, fervently with pride. So do not walk away from us. We need you by our side. The legacy of James VI put sovereignty in your hands. Don't let that power disappear, and with it, this your land. Don't let your mind confine you. Break down your barricades. Don't play the game within their rules. Don't bow to their charades. This is a gift they cannot take away, and only one that you can cede. A gift that even they don't have, but they want it to succeed. Relinquish this, relinquish power, relinquish all you had or gave, relinquish all of this or more, to become Westminster's slave. They'll summon you to their request, to be abused and used. I'm in a place you have not reached, with powers yet unused. For you, time stood unsaidly still, in this haphazard romance. Yet here you are with chains round feet, still learning how to dance. Far too many have forgotten how they've loved us in the past, and too many have forgotten how long this dance was meant to last. Brits. They live in an empire that the world long forgot, and cling to their memories, that's all they've got. They dream domination, an illusion they'll keep, but they can't take the truth and won't wake from their sleep. They still rule a world that was lost long ago, but these relics still revel and cannot let go. My people. No matter what the verdict be, Scotland's folk have been set free. Their minds alight, their hearts afire. They'll take nae mair the London lyre. They'll question all and mair again, till a common man will freely reign. O'er his thoughts and of his deeds, the risen Scot will now succeed. The pain he felt now conquers fear. He cast one out and kept one near. And what he feels, he now will say, lest he be judged on Judgment Day. And come that day will come his prayer. Look in his eyes and feel his stare. He's sovereign in his ancient land. I bow to you, my common man. The unwashed. Ye send them here, unwashed, unclean, unshaven, needin' fed. They're a trash that nobody wants up here, and like you, they're no well read. They hoard their hearts within their heads when siller comes to mind, for treachery is the deadly game they play to rob us blind. The Man o' Words. He wrapped himself in Scotland, fought the fight that others craved, and cursed this heartless union and those who made us slaves. To the man who gied us honest words, this man who tilled his field, to the man who never gied a damn, to the man who would nae yield. He enriched the poor with painted words and brought life to other dreams, with ghouls and ghosts and witches and loved by Bonnie Streams. To the man we know as Rabbi, who felt our honest pain, or sculpted out in giant bronze, wi' a vista o' his ain. No only are ye cast in bronze, ye're cast in Scottish hearts, and ye surpers that ye wrote of, ripped our nation wide apart. To the man who's up there looking down, we can feel your earthly gaze, to a man unlike nae other, quite deserving of our praise. To the man who gave us all he had, whose words were oft unkind, to a Scottish bard with a Scottish heart and an independent mind. Wrapped in freedom's chains, I want to see my country free and never again be sold, and those who are here from foreign lands with stories still untold can stand upright beside us and make our nation great and leave behind the great deception they call the British state. It's a sordid place where nothing's changed and nothing gets resolved. How can Scotland progress when they've still not evolved? Our liberty lies with sovereignty. It is us who wield the powers. Our people's voice must now be heard and take back what is ours. They build our walls to watch us fall, built by dictatorial rule. And while we rise against them, they're backed by the British fool. Our children are abandoned, their freedom's been curtailed, and though I have travelled far and wide, our children have been failed. Our scathing attacks on their uselessness are unreserved and justified. They have lied to you, lied to themselves, and spoken fascist pride. Their leader stood up yesterday and deflected all in any blame. She has wrapped us all in freedom's chains. She is England's shame. My presence. This hall is almost empty. The government has withdrawn. They do not wish my presence, but they'll notice when I'm gone. I'm surrounded by a silence, yet still cut the atmosphere, where ugly allies stare with eyes, eyes I see full of fear. Why do the many walk away, disrespecting what I'm due? Why do they hiss and jeer and diss the words of those so few? Is the truth so hard for them to bear, that contempt is all they serve? And those Scots who sit beside them think we get what we deserve. In a past life that was treason, but their betrayal is now a skill, where constituents' thoughts are swept aside and branded overkill. Yet they rest with their impunity tattooed glibly on their heads, with deceptive speeches paramount at the fore of all that's said. These parasites feed off apathy and will not listen to my voice. They can empty halls, ignore me, but Scotland has another choice. Sunken ships to independence. Oh, look who's sailing down the river. Look who's heading out to sea. Corporate convoys filled with bankers, with holes in every hull we see. Yes, they're sailing from our waters, with all their riches safe on board. Billionaires with foreign passports, sailing with their stolen hoard. But look, the ships are sinking slowly. They're now below the waterline. No one heeds the poor man's warning. Tory chaos is refined. Yes, we stand here on the shoreline, watching as their ships go down. Dinghies left behind can't save them, or their precious golden crowns. Will we gather at their graveside? I don't think so, said the Scots. With open arms we tried to save them, but they'd no time for foreign thoughts. Now the sea is calm and settled. There are no battles left to fight. All that's left is independence. which Scotland sees as Scotland's right. Kirsty Blackman, the smiley one. Like her hair, this lady's short, but with a heart that's quite immense, and proud of where she comes from, of that there's no pretense. If you don't know this lady, then I wonder where you've been. You can find her by the Northern Lights, way up in Aberdeen. And she'll always talk up Scotland, as her perfect ditching states, whilst talking down this union, which we know is in dire straits. She flicks a scarf around her neck, and dons her trademark smile, and talks outside a parliament with her usual craft and guile. But condemned before she even speaks, she encounters them with grace, by responding with an honest voice and a great big smiling face. She knows we're right behind her, and no matter how they goad, we'll be walking down together on our independence road. My wee blue enamelled yes badge. I've a wee enamelled badge I wear, and I wear it with great pride, and I think of all you thousands who stand proudly by my side. It's just a simple badge and message, but it shouts out loud to me, my wee blue enamelled yes badge that says Scotland will be free. When I see the flags all flying high, in the square or in the green, or anywhere my friends are, it's the best sight to be seen. When they dress up in their tartans, even in their finest Highland dress, I look with pride in all of them, and my wee badge saying yes. No matter what my jacket is, my badge takes pride of place, and walking down the street I see a stranger smiling face. I know just why they're smiling, and I know it's not for me. It's for my wee blue enamelled yes badge that says set our Scotland free. To some it's insignificant, but to me it means the world. It signifies just who I am as I watch your flags unfurled. This wee blue enamelled badge I wear brings back memories for me. But one day I'll look for one last time, and that's the day that Scotland's free. They say we are inclusive, and who am I to disagree? It's a symbol of my passion that no man can take from me. It's just a wee blue enamelled yes badge given to me by a friend. It's a badge that says we've had enough and that London's rule must end. This is not a badge of protest against any other race or man, but it is against Westminster, who are destroying this, my land. We see their hatred coming, but the blind refuse to see. Stand up and take your country back. Be proud. Make Scotland free. Our First Minister. Our FM's pure dead brilliant and gets called all sorts of names. She's just out there lapping up her walks and playing all kinds of games. She doesn't need her minders or the hassle that they bring. She's happy opening up a park, then playing on the swings. She's one of us and loves it, getting selfies with the wains, kissing, cuddling, hodding them as if they were her own. She doesn't do refusals, even when she needs a rest. She sees the crowd as right good pals and no as bloody pests. Oh, the woman Coorie Roon, well, their men all kind of hide, but they're smiling fae a corner and bursting out with pride. It doesn't matter who you are, she will only pass you by, on the streets or in a shop, or running through their eye. I haven't met her FM, but heard she's got a heart of gold. I only know this through some pals of mine, and the stories I've been told. But closer and you'll get a tongue that'll make you want to greet, and she'll answer all your questions, even when she feels dead beat. There aren't many country's leaders who love to meet the likes of us. From private jets to first-class trains, she even jumps a bus. I said before she's one of us, and long may this queen reign. Just keep doing what you're doing now, and we'll vote you in again. The band is back. Democracy is on the move, marching to a tartan beat, with psalters flying high once more on every Scottish street. Hearts are reignited and they're dancing to a tune. For the pipes and drums are playing, we'll be independent soon. They'll be hanging out their tenements to watch the great parade, and some of you will walk down streets where as children you once played. If you know an undecided, bring them in, give them a hand, for we're all on the same journey to our independent land. You'll get the wave, the nod, the wink, the smiles from passers-by. You get the horns beating and drivers shouting aye. Some choppers will give you dirty looks. Some will even think they're grand. They'll free money from their wallets while you march to free their land. I hear you chant, I see you laugh. I've been there and it's fun. And the road that you now travel is for your daughters and your sons. So grab your friends and neighbours, walk together side by side. Make them feel independent and let them share your pride. It's a spectacle of colour where you get to meet new friends, and I'm talking from experience, those friendships never end. They're always there beside you, always there to lend a hand. They're the independence movement and they just want to back their land. Bring those who fear a government that will send them from our shores. Call all our EU citizens, let them know we've opened doors. And the immigrants are welcome to march with us today. And together we'll go forward on our Independence Day. Our rookies. There were rookies all ages all on their first march, and their eyes had a visual feast. On this great granite stage they faltered in line up here in Scotland's northeast. Searching, inhaling, they breathed it all in, with every one of them looking so braw. All dressed in their finest with their pals and their wains, it's nae wonder they looked on in awe. We fidget and jostle, he'd bobbed up and down, and anxiety played their part. Muslin and bustling with whistles and flags, but mostly with proud pumping hearts. I saw big smiling faces for kids in their kilts and the shooters of Daz carried high. There were dugs with bandanas and guys in disguise and dying for question time fame. I met a lady called Lottie and a lassie called Jen. And Blue, but that's no her real name. They marched on injustice for ourselves, for their kids, against this colonial threat. And as they marched off, they had lumps in their throats. It was like a scene from a Jacobite set. They were brimming with smiles, swirling their flags, and danced round and sang to the tunes. Then stopped, gathered breath. Then laughed at the bereft. Manky Jacket and all his yuns. Aye, Aberdeen, the jewel of the north. A wall of water welcomed us as we neared Aberdeen. The North Sea and its oil rigs have brought fortunes unforeseen. But as oil barons seize our wealth, all with Westminster's thanks, and with gratitude leave their legacy, austerity and food banks. I wandered round the city streets, where the granite gleamed and shone, where the shoveling public pass ye by, but at least leave you alone. Then I felt disgust from glancing eyes, and sneers from old and young. The oil gave them fancy cars, but what benefits had it brung? But then the streets took on a tone seen so many times before. A warmth filled this northern jewel and my heart began to soar. The saltires draped our tartan plaid with rampants flowing high, blocked out their great depressive state till I no more heard their sighs. They came over from Orkney, the Western Isles, the Borders and all in between. They drove and they flew and came over by boat to meet up with I Aberdeen. Everyone welcomed, none turned away. Union City would soon sing its blues, for here were the people ready to march and ready for Scotland's views. We gathered up at Albine Place, where friends were easily found. We spoke with many, old and new, here was our common ground. For some it was easy, we'd been there before, but the first-timers were raring to go. This was their Independence Day, and today would be their show. You could feel their desire, the pride in their hearts, a pride that beamed from their eyes, and paraded that feeling from beginning to end as we laughed off the Unionist lies. Oh aye, they were there, Manky Jakey and pals, flying rags like the rallies before. 20 quid's not a lot to sell out your soul. It's amazing what they'll do for a score. Well, the failed Ross Thompson went missing, in a bar with some strangers, I guess, while I, Aberdeen, were the victors today, along with the family of Yes. Will the jewel of the North now open their eyes and see what the rest of us see? Or will they let the barns decide this city's fate while the rest of us march to be free? The Betrayal and Death of William Wallace. The pact was signed in Rutherglen's Kirk, where a name would be revealed. Just another Scotsman's life betrayed, another Scot whose fate was sealed. He was captured at Robroyson by a Lord Sir John Menteith and a guardian of old Scotland. No more her air he'd breathe. In silence they dispatched the news. Their riders swiftly raced to alert King Edward Longshanks that the Wallace was disgraced. For 3 long weeks, bound hands and feet, they paraded England's prize. And though anger raged within his heart, a sadness filled his eyes. His trial by a foreign court was held at Westminster Hall. He would not bow down to England's crown, nor to their great cabal. And the predetermined verdict claimed that a traitor's death he'd face, and at Smithfield's Haberdasher's Hall, the gallows took their place. Chained naked to a wooden frame, he was dragged o'er cobbled stones, pelted by what came to hand as their king took up his throne. They laid his brutal body bare, ravaged by their fun-filled day, and now he'd face his cruel death, not another word he'd say. Hanged, then dropped, while still alive, the robe jerked his body tight. Then with joy they cut his manhood and burned him within his sight. His stomach slit, then disemboweled, his entrails shone to the crowd. They burned upon the brazier as their royalty had avowed. The hangman held his knife aloft, then opened up his chest and pulled out his warm, beating heart, a skill the hangman must possess. Then cut off his head and held it high for all the crowd to see, then quartered up his body parts, all done by royal decree. His limbs were sent to Newcastle, to Berwick, Stirling, Perth, the sentence for a Scottish knight for their treason on this earth. His head was spiked on Tower Bridge to embarrass Scotland's son and to put the fear of Christ in Scots, but that fear was all undone. A barbaric death in barbaric times, but it was a death held back for Scots. This butchery was the devil's work, another evil royal plot. But tales of William Wallace spread, and a martyr he became. And far beyond this island's realms, freedom claimed his name. When a man stands up for his beliefs and stands up for what is right, no power can match the human faith, not even royal might. Wallace lives in us today, in the heart of every Scot, but his freedom is a right for all and not what we are being taught.
Indie Proud, yes, Indie Proud, on Indie Live Radio. Indie Proud.